Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 170 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her modesty and feminism. Oh yeah, you heard me right, and this is going to be a terrific show. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils, customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode and rate and review the show. I just love hearing from you. Yeah, I sit around twiddling my thumb waiting to hear from you. So come on down with that feedback after the show. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I'm reading about this amazing new book that just came out. And I think it was the New York Times. And it's called The Beauty Suit: How My Year of Modesty Made Me a Better Feminist. I hadn't even heard the word modesty in, I don't know, like 30 years or something. What? What is this all about? Well, I reached out to the author, and we have Lauren Shields with us today, the author of this really provocative book. And she holds BFAs in religious studies and television, film, and music production, and a Master of Divinity degree. She is seeking ordination in the United Church of Christ and lives in San Jose with her husband. Lauren, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much.
All right. I mean, right now, I just read that title to everyone out there on the Her podcast land. They're scratching their heads saying, say what? What is this all about? So what got you inspired to write the book and begin this journey?
Sure. Well, that's a common response. It's a weird thing to put religious modesty and feminism in the same sentence. But what got me inspired was that in my first year of seminary, and by the way, I went to seminary because I really liked the church, and I really liked sort of how it felt and the community. But at the same time, there were all these kind of oppressive values that were still being bandied about. And so I wanted to go to seminary and see if it was possible to be a progressive Christian. Turns out it is, but that's another story. So I was in seminary, and I had a class on women in church history. And this woman came in and talked about the hijab, which is the headscarf that Muslim women wear. And as a sort of a typical white feminist, I thought, oh, the hijab, this is the part where we talk about how oppressive it is and how terrible Islam is and everything else. And this woman came in and she was like, actually, most Muslim women in America who cover voluntarily. It's not done by their husbands. It's not done by their families. And a lot of Muslim women who cover do it for feminist reasons. And that really blew my mind. And I thought, how is that possible? And I kind of looked down at my own body, and I was in what I called the beauty suit, which is like the tight skirt and the makeup and the hair done and, you know, all of the effort that we put into looking a certain way. And I thought, you know, I feel like I have to wear this stuff just to leave the house. Who am I to say that women who cover are oppressed when I myself feel obligated to do a certain thing just to live my life? And I was curious as to whether or not I could get by without all of that attention to my hair and makeup and everything else, if I could explore modesty. And so I designed an experiment where for 9 months, I covered my hair, arms, and legs and stopped wearing makeup.
Now, when you covered your hair, how did you do that?
Yeah, so I drew inspiration from Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. So I didn't wear a hijab because that's not my culture. It would be appropriation for me to do that. So sometimes I wore like a scarf wrapped around my head. Sometimes I wore a hat, but the point of covering my head was just to get myself out of seeing my hairdo as part of my identity.
Oh, I see. So, you know, out of sight, out of mind in many respects, I suppose. I remember the days back in the 60s, if you remember, sort of a bit more of the, you know, when the hippie thing started up and whatever. We had these scarves that you put in your hair you know, had lots of different patterns and they were colorful and back and forth. But they were almost a little bit of what you wear at the kibbutz, right? Where the hair is tied back so it's not hanging around in your face and you can actually get some work done and back and forth. But how interesting. How difficult was it for you to transition from the suit, as you call it in your book, to this new attire?
Oh, it was so hard. And I knew it was going to be hard. So what I did was I set a time period for this experiment. It was going to be the 9 months before my 30th birthday. And I told everybody that I was going to do this experiment. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. And they were like, why are you doing this? And I explained it to them. I started a blog to stay accountable. I had like, you know, 5 followers. So it wasn't like a huge, you know, it wasn't a huge following. But having that accountability really made me go, okay, well, it's January 1st, time to start the modesty experiment. And at the time, I was at a swing dancing convention. And swing dancing involves an enormous amount of beauty suiting, only it's a 1940s beauty suit. Part of the fun of swing dancing, right? Like the red lipstick and the hair. And, you know, so I was at this convention and I looked awesome on New Year's Eve. And then I went to bed and I woke up the next day and I had my modesty outfit all set out. And honestly, I avoided like public appearance for about 3 days, the first 3 days, because I was so self-conscious. So,
well, what did you wear? I mean, like, you know, you'd been shopping in certain places for a long time. So where do you shop? What do you actually wear?
Yeah. So the rules that I set for my clothes were cover my shoulders, or cover my arms, you know, up to my shoulders, cover my legs down to my knees, and don't wear anything that is so tight that you have to sit funny or suck in your tummy. You know, those like shirts that you look really good in only if you stand a certain way kind of thing. So I put all of those clothes that were part of my wardrobe away. I put them in plastic bags so I wouldn't be tempted to wear them. And so what I actually wore initially, I was like, well, I'm not supposed to care about my appearance at all, so I'm just going to wear kind of sloppy stuff. So I wore baggy pants and kind of a baggy shirt and a hat. That went on for about 2 weeks, maybe less, until I realized that there's a difference between looking modest and looking sloppy.
There's an interesting thought. I hadn't thought about that. But you're actually right. If you actually, you know, all you have to do is hang around a mall or an airport and you can kind of see a boatload of sloppy going on. And basically you're just putting on sacks and, you know, and it doesn't look particularly good. So tell us what modesty looks like. Cause we all kind of had our, you know, we all have our put on our sweats and forget we're alive days, especially on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So what did your out? I mean, where did you shop for this? I mean, like, what kind of attire was this? It sounds more like it's a dress or it's a loose shirt and a loose skirt. Is that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it was dresses. Sometimes it was loose shirts and skirts. My initial idea involved like overhauling my whole wardrobe, but that was kind of not the point of what I was trying to do. I was trying to simplify, not buy a different costume. So most days I just wore jeans and a loose fitting shirt and a headscarf. But again, I was not sloppy. I made sure that I felt like I looked put together and clean and, you know, like I had put some effort into my appearance, while still adhering to the rules that I had set forth for myself.
A lot of women walk around now in a more relaxed fashion, looking good in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, say, for instance. They may not, well, depending upon how hot it is outside and all the rest of it, you know, it could be a t-shirt or a longer shirt one way or the other. But I see a lot more of that going on. And whether you tuck it in or not is kind of irrelevant. But I see a lot of that going on. And as far as the hair is concerned, what I'm also observing is a lot of women just put their hair up in a quick little barrette, you know, and kind of clamp it back there and forget it's there, instead of making sure you have the perfect shiny, sheeny, you know, looking thing that you labored over for hours before you left the house. I'm also seeing a lot less makeup. And I think if you probably saw trending about, gosh, what was it, 6 months ago? Within the year, some big-time celebrities and models who were sporting basically almost no makeup at all. I remember Christina Aguilera, the singer, had some pictures on, I don't know, Instagram or something, showing her with nothing on. And others are doing selfies like that. I'm not sure if that's something that is, you know, just some kind of a PR stunt, or if it really means something to them. What were your thoughts when you saw a lot of this?
That was exactly my thought was, you know, is this a PR stunt or is this something that means something to them? I think that, like, for example, Alicia Keys has completely taken off makeup, and every time she appears in public, she's never wearing makeup. And she's made it really public that I'm doing this because I don't agree with the beauty standards that women are forced to labor under and that we're forced to spend so much time and so much money and so much energy on. But when celebrities kind of take their makeup off for a short time, my kind of gut reaction was concern because I was like, okay, so Christina Aguilera is not wearing makeup, but she has an entire team of people whose job it is to make sure that she has good skin, that she eats the right things, that she exercises at the right time. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of a false message that, oh, you know, I'm totally okay with, you know, not wearing makeup and just being completely messy in public. Well, yeah, but you're famous. Like you're making a statement by doing that. For the average woman, a lot of the time going out without makeup and without hair done, especially in the professional world, it's a bit of a risk. And I'm glad that we're seeing a lot more of, you know, t-shirts and barrettes and stuff. But in general, I would say that the beauty ideal with the shiny hair and the makeup and everything else, I would say that women are still expected to do that for professional positions and when we know we're going to be seen. So,
You know, I'm an athlete, I'm a triathlete. And so, what's really fascinating is, many times I'm watching now, as, younger women are entering the gym and they're not coming in with a boatload of makeup and craziness going on, which never made any sense to me. Anyway, you're going in to sweat you're going to look like hell when you get out of here. So now it's cool if you just came off work or something and you had to wear it, whatever. But the bottom line is I'm seeing a lot less of the heavy stuff. I think makeup artists like Bobby Brown and others have always been into the muted, more of your natural look and beiges and things like that without turning yourself into a clown. I think that there was sort of an undercurrent going on for a while anyway. You know, this whole issue of, as it were, the suit, I'm also noting something else, which is quite fascinating. I'm also a Wall Streeter, believe it or not, and that means that I am an actual operating advisor to one of the big funds, I work specifically within the sector of healthy living and aging, so that's my role. I just happen to be superb with the business thing. And one of the things I notice on Wall Street and that whole thing where it's mostly populated by men, that the women who are there tend to downplay the appearance thing major league, and that they tend to be much more of, as it were, of a Brooks Brothers look, that they tend to downplay. They're more of what you'd expect out of a, like a female lawyer or a finance person. that there's not a lot of loud makeup or over frilly anything, and they do tend to cover up a lot more, which is where the power suit first showed up. And I just find that within those ranks, if you even tried to do the madman kind of look, you know, for the women, it would never work under any circumstances. But I think for the rest of them, if you work for a magazine or, you know, whatever else, I think it's almost, you know, as it were, a fun costume, you know, just putting it out there and having some fun with it all and coming in with half purple hair and, you know, screaming red lips and, you know, I think that there's sort of other interesting manifestations of, as it were, feminism that are kind of almost the other extreme. You know, it's like, okay, you want to see it? Now you're really going to see it.
You know? Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that makes sense to you, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, how we look is absolutely a mode of self-expression. Where I kind of bump up against it ideologically is to what extent is that mode of self-expression, to what extent does that become our sense of self-worth? But yeah, I mean, you know, purple hair and crazy makeup and like being, you know, being really out there with the way that you dress. I get that. I still do that myself a lot of the time. It feels really good, you know? And I'm interested to hear that, on Wall Street, women kind of downplay, their bodies or don't wear a lot of makeup. When I worked on, Fifth Avenue at a corporate ethics company, it was totally different, but maybe that's kind of a neighborhood difference within Manhattan. I guess if you work on the fashion capital of the world, even if you don't work in fashion, you're going to be wearing a pretty significant beauty suit.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it is you want to deflect off appearance so that people, so that the guys in charge can focus on the brains and what you're actually putting out. And I think that that is, you know, that whole issue of, as it were, distraction. You know, you don't want to be distracting because, quite frankly, all the guys look the same. It's the same old, you know.
They do.
It's just the same suit, same, you know, blazer and loafers and Dockers and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas with the women, it's like, what are we supposed to be doing here? You have to think about it. It's like, no loud colors, no, you know, no short stuff and no cleavage and no, you know, you can't do any of that. Whereas if you work for, you know, Condé Nast, I mean, come on, give me a break. You're all over the place. You know, now you have in your book here, well, first of all, I want to ask the question I know that all my listeners are wondering. So the experiment's over. Where the heck are you now with your life? Did you are you sustaining all of this? What's going on?
You know, it's been a weird couple of years for me because the experiment ended, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. And when it ended initially, I was like, yay, I get to wear the beauty suit again. I really missed it. But I noticed immediately that it wasn't as much fun anymore. Not only was it not as much fun, it didn't make me feel as secure as it used to. And I was like, oh, man, well, so if I'm not doing the modesty experiment, how am I going to, you know, what's my relationship to the beauty suit? What's my relationship to how I look? So I spent a couple of years kind of experimenting with how do I look authentic to me and yet feel like I'm put together and I'm, you know, I'm towing the cultural line as much as we need to, because, you know, to some extent we all have to kind of participate in societal rules about how we look. So where I am now is, I don't know if folks in New York do this, but for Californians, undercuts on women are like all the rage, like everybody has them out here. And for folks who don't know, an undercut is like you shave the bottom half of your head. And I have done that. So I have no hair from my ears, probably down. Well, actually my temples down. But over that I have like a bob haircut. And the reason that I like that is because when I have to do things at church, for example, and I'm not sure how people are going to take me, I can wear the bob down and they don't see the shaved part. But when I really want to feel myself, I'll pull my hair up and I have shaved on the bottom and I have a braid on the top and it looks kind of punk rock. And I really like that.
I love it. And I've actually seen a lot of that. Yeah, a lot of women are doing that, and some women look ridiculously good doing that. I mean, just crazy good, and
right?
It looks really, it definitely looks contemporary punk and all the rest of it. So what about your clothes? I mean, have you changed any of that?
You know, I have. I no longer feel comfortable in anything above the knee, generally speaking. And it's not a shame thing. It's not like, oh, I don't look good in these skirts. It's, I can't move in these skirts. And I feel stared at in these skirts, and I don't always want to be stared at. So generally, I don't wear things above the knee anymore. I generally don't expose my shoulders unless I'm working out. And I'm really religious about, so my personal insecurity is my tummy, as I suspect it is for a lot of women and maybe a lot of men.
No, stop. So I know, really?
I know, right? Yeah, right? Shocker. So I'm really conscious about, do I feel like I'm sucking in my tummy? If so, why am I wearing this? I need to be wearing something that I feel like I can move in. So in a lot of ways, I've incorporated the modesty experiment into the rest of my life.
Interesting. I love it. So do you wear like shorts if it's a hot day? And, you know, I mean, that's above the knee, unless you're wearing like pedal pushers or something. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. You know, I actually, for the first time this summer, I tried wearing shorts, and I feel so weird that I would rather overdress than wear a skirt. I've gone out in shorts maybe 3 times this summer, just because I was like, dude, everybody else is wearing shorts. What's my problem? Well, my issue is that I just don't like wearing shorts anymore. So skirts or pedal pushers or even like knee-length shorts. I know that sounds kind of Gilligan's Island-y, but I have a lot of friends in the church who do that, female friends who are really lovely women who are like, I don't want to wear shorts, so this is what I'm going for. So,
well, it's
no,
like
not
capris.
Really with the shorts.
It was basically mm-hmm. capris, you know, and those are
yes,
totally cool.
Exactly.
And lots of people use those.
Yes.
So, you know, as we're closing
yeah.
out, I think, you know, what you've done with your book, which again is mm-hmm. The Beauty Suit, How My Year of Modesty Made Me a Better Feminist. I think what you did in the book, throughout the book, is you had the reader pause for a moment and
mm-hmm.
consider
mm-hmm.
what mm-hmm. they wear and what message they're putting out there, what part of their life and
mm-hmm.
who they are they're putting out there, and whether or not they're really truly aware of what that
mm-hmm.
means. You had equated the suit, you know, the original suit, with empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think you're, at the very least, you're asking women to take a moment, examine what they're wearing and
mm-hmm.
and why they're wearing it,
mm-hmm.
and what kind of message that's giving out there,
mm-hmm.
and to really potentially experiment a little bit with it, with
mm-hmm.
some different things. Like, for instance, in your last part of the book, you have a number of things you want women to play with a little bit. One is going without makeup for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, that's something I've always done. I mean,
nice.
I think
yeah.
a lot of it depends upon where you come from. Now, on the one hand, if you're taking
mm-hmm.
really good care of your skin and you don't need to be Christina, you know, Aguilera with her zillions of dollars worth of, you know, beauty people and all the rest of it. You know, it's just a simple,
yeah.
straightforward, take care of yourself, self-care regimen works quite nicely. Thank you very much. And then to proudly put that out there and just say, hey, this is me, is really
mm-hmm.
very freeing. It feels good, so that when you actually do put makeup on, it feels a little strange. It's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are you enhancing? Why are you doing this? Since I do a lot of television
mm-hmm.
and videos and things like that, I have no choice because of the whole
right.
issue of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. However, you know, mm-hmm. my happiest moment is taking a pressure hose to my face afterwards and getting all the stuff off.
Yeah.
It's like, get this stuff off me. You know, I can hear my little pores going, help me, you know, just, you know, and there it is. Yeah, I think that that's important. And the other thing, too, is mm-hmm. you like people to take a week, you know, at least some kind of a hiatus from social media, because quite frankly, mm-hmm. there are so many people, especially who have Instagram dysmorphia, you know, who look at it and compare themselves and all the rest mm-hmm. of it. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that's it. And then the final piece of this is really examining this one thing, which we really don't have time to get into in a big way, but I highly encourage everyone get the book so that you can read Lauren's take on this. But, you know, noticing how female power is conflated with sex appeal in the media, mm-hmm. like, you know, what's the crossover with that? What's happening with that? Mm-hmm. You know, when you look mm-hmm. at, you know, Katy Perry out there wearing her, you know, leopard skin interesting outfit and all the rest of it, and she's obviously you know, what is she trying to say? Obviously she's an entertainer, no question about that, mm-hmm. but you know, there just seems to be a lot of that kind of interesting stuff going on. And I think the very last piece of this, which I know is in the book somewhere, is you know, as women age, you know, and we don't have to worry about this, you know, cleavage issue and all the rest of it, in terms of we're not looking to find someone to mate with, to, you know, start a family with or anything. But that, mm-hmm. you know, what does power dressing look like as you age? What does that, you know, femininity and feminism both together look like as you age? I'm just going to throw it out there and ask everyone, you heard me, everyone, to go ahead and grab this book. It's called The Beauty Suit, How My Year of Modesty Made Me a Better Feminist. This is a fabulous book, incredibly provocative. You know what I would do if I were you? You know, grab a whole bunch of girlfriends out there, get the, you know, estrogen squad together, and do a little book club on this thing, so that you're going to have a lot of grist for your mill. The author is our wonderful guest for today. That's Lauren Shields. Lauren Shields. And grab the book, learn more about her wonderful work. And Lauren, I cannot begin to thank you enough for writing the book and getting us all to think about this in a big way.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely. And everyone out there, right now, just take a moment to hit iTunes and rate and review this show. This has been really compelling and provocative. So let's go for it with Lauren Shields. Oh, we're just sitting here waiting to hear from you, because this helps us understand what's important to you, too. Well, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of this wonderful Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.